All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're taking a look at a pretty important case, Bockrath v. Aldrich Chemical Co., a 1999 California Supreme Court decision.
Oh yeah, Bockrath. This one's a classic.
It is. And actually, you know, a listener wrote in and suggested we cover this one to really get into the nitty-gritty of toxic tort law. Specifically, you know, how specific does a plaintiff actually need to be when they're claiming they've been injured, but the injury might have been caused by, like, lots of different toxins from a bunch of different sources.
Right, right. Like, how do you even start to untangle that mess?
Exactly. And this case really changed how things are done in California. So anyone who's interested in environmental law, product liability, really even just complex civil litigation in general, you've got to know about Bockrath.
For sure.
So today we'll dig into the background of the case, figure out exactly what the big legal issue was, and break down how the court thought about it all.
Sounds good.
And of course, we want to understand why Bockrath is still so important today.
Because it definitely is.
So to kick things off, the case is about this guy, Thomas Bockrath. He worked at Hughes Aircraft for a long time, like 20 years.
Wow, 2 decades.
Yeah, and he ends up developing cancer.
Oh, that's awful.
It is. So he decides to sue, wait for it, 55 different manufacturers.
55.
55, claiming that all the chemicals they made, you know, things like WD-40, rubber cement, all sorts of stuff, he's saying, those chemicals are what caused his cancer.
Okay, I can see where this is going.
Right. It seems pretty straightforward on the surface, but there's a catch. His initial complaint, when he first filed the lawsuit, it was missing something really crucial.
Oh, there's always a catch in these cases.
Always. And that's why both the trial court and then the Court of Appeal dismissed his case.
Interesting.
But then the California Supreme Court stepped in and totally reversed those decisions.
Oh, wow. A real turnaround.
Yeah. So the big question is, what was that critical missing piece? And why did the highest court in California see things so differently from the lower courts?
Yeah, what were they thinking?
Well, that's exactly what we're going to figure out. So to understand the real issue in Bockrath, we need to talk about this legal concept of causation.
Causation, yeah.
Specifically, how it works in toxic tort cases where you've got multiple defendants.
Right, right. Because it gets complicated fast.
It does. The court was trying to figure out, when someone claims they got sick because they were exposed to, like, a whole bunch of different toxins from different companies,
yeah,
how specific do they actually have to be when they first file that lawsuit?
Right, because you can't just say, well, I was around chemicals and now I'm sick, so someone's got to pay.
Exactly. And under California law, and this is really key, each company's product has to be proven to be a substantial factor in causing the harm.
Okay, substantial factor. So what does that even mean in this context?
Right, it's not just like everyday cause and effect.
Yeah, it's got to be more than just, well, it was there, so maybe it did something.
Totally. So we need to figure out what the legal world means by substantial factor.
Yeah, unpack that a little.
And how it's different from just a regular understanding of cause and effect.
I mean, think about it. You can't always pinpoint the cause of something,
mm-hmm.
especially when it comes to illness.
Right.
It's not always black and white. There can be lots of different things contributing to a problem.
That's a good point.
The law recognizes that. Like, with substantial factor, it acknowledges there can be multiple things at play.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like, imagine a car accident. Maybe one driver was speeding, the other ran a stop sign, and it was raining like crazy.
Yeah, terrible visibility.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. All of those things could be considered substantial factors in causing the accident, even if none of them alone would have been enough to cause it.
Mm-hmm.
And Bockrath gets even more complicated because you have a whole bunch of potential causes and a whole bunch of companies that could be responsible.
Right, each one making their own products and chemicals.
Yeah, so how do you sort that out?
Well, that's where Bockrath's initial complaint ran into trouble. The lower courts basically said it was way too broad.
Too broad.
Yeah, they actually used the word global.
Global, okay.
He basically just claimed he was exposed to most, if not all, of the 222 different chemicals these companies made.
Oh, wow, so he wasn't specific at all.
Nope. He didn't say exactly which products he thought were connected to his cancer.
So the lower courts were like, nope, you got to give us more to work with.
Exactly. They basically said, look, you've named a ton of companies and a ton of chemicals, but you're not showing us how any specific product is linked to your specific illness.
I mean, that makes sense.
Right. But it also brings up this huge question that anyone in a similar situation has to face.
Yeah.
How do you actually prove which exposure caused your illness? especially when there are so many possibilities and it happened over such a long time.
Right, and especially when the science behind it all can be super complicated.
Totally. And this is what makes what the California Supreme Court did so important.
Oh, yeah, the Supreme Court.
They disagreed with the lower courts.
Yeah.
They said Bachrath should be allowed to amend his complaint.
To be more specific.
Exactly. Give more details. And to help with that, they laid out this 5-part test that plaintiffs in multi-defendant toxic tort cases in California, they have to meet this test when they're first pleading causation.
Okay, so this 5-part test is like the heart of the Bachrath decision.
It is, yeah. So part one is exposure. The court said you have to specifically allege exposure to each and every toxin that you're claiming caused your illness.
Okay, so none of this vague, most of the chemical stuff.
Right. You have to actually say which specific substances you were exposed to. Like if someone worked with a bunch of different cleaning solvents over the years, they'd need to say exactly which solvents.
Got it. Be specific. What's number two?
Number two is product identification. You can't just name the general type of chemical. You have to identify the specific product you think caused your injury.
So not just rubber cement, but like brand X rubber cement. If they know that.
Exactly. Just listing all the chemicals like Bachrath did, it wasn't enough. He needed to link specific products to his cancer.
Makes sense.
Okay, part three might seem super obvious, but it's still really important to establish causation.
What is it?
Internalization.
Okay.
You have to clearly say that those toxins from the products you named, they actually entered your body. It's not enough to just say they were present in your work environment.
Right, like it was in the air or I touched it or something.
Yeah, you have to claim that you inhaled it, ingested it, absorbed it through your skin, something like that.
It had to get in you somehow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, number four is a big one. This is really the heart of the causation requirement.
Lay it on me.
Substantial factor. So for each toxin you've said entered your body, you have to argue that it was more than just a tiny, insignificant factor in causing or making your illness worse.
Ah, so this goes back to that whole legal definition of what actually is causation.
Exactly. Okay, last one, number five, is defendant linkage.
Okay, defendant linkage.
And this one, except for a few specific situations that we'll talk about later, you basically have to link each toxin that you're saying caused harm directly to a specific company that you're suing.
So Bachrath couldn't just say, I was exposed to Chemical X.
Right.
He had to connect Chemical X, probably from a certain product, to a certain manufacturer.
Exactly. And that's super important because it reinforces the idea that generally each company is only responsible for the harm caused by their own stuff.
Yeah, it prevents someone from just like suing everyone under the sun and hoping something sticks.
Exactly. You have to actually do the work to connect the specific harm to a specific company's actions. Now, the court did talk about a couple of exceptions to this 5-part rule.
Okay, exceptions, like what?
Well, one is this idea of market share liability.
Market share liability. I've heard that term before, but...
Yeah, maybe not in this context. Basically, it's something courts might use in very specific cases where it's like almost impossible for the plaintiff to say exactly which company made the product that harmed them.
No. Okay.
So, like, a classic example is those old asbestos cases.
Right, asbestos.
Back when a ton of different companies were making basically the same asbestos products for years and years.
So it would be almost impossible to trace it back to one specific company.
Exactly. In those cases, sometimes courts allowed plaintiffs to sue a group of companies that basically controlled a big chunk of the market for that harmful product.
Well, interesting.
And if the plaintiff could show they were harmed by that type of product, then each company could be held responsible based on how much of the market they control.
That makes sense.
But the Bachrath court said that didn't apply in Bachrath's case.
Why not?
Because he was able to identify specific products and the companies that made them.
Ah, he just wasn't specific enough with the connection.
Right, even though he wasn't totally clear on exactly how each one caused his cancer. So he had to stick to that higher standard of linking each toxin to a specific defendant.
Got it.
The other thing the court talked about was Doe defendants.
Doe defendants, okay. Those are those placeholder names you see in a lawsuit sometimes.
Yeah, exactly, like John Doe or Jane Doe.
Yeah.
So the court was basically saying, look, if you have a good reason to believe you have a claim against someone,
yeah,
but you don't actually know their name yet,
you can use a placeholder.
You can use a Doe defendant in your complaint. This lets you file the lawsuit on time, you know, before the statute of limitations runs out.
Right. Statutes of limitations are a big deal.
They are. And then later on, when you figure out who that defendant is, you can amend your complaint and put their real name in.
So it's kind of like a temporary fix.
Exactly. It gives you some time to investigate.
But the court probably had something to say about how to use them, right?
Oh, they did. They were really clear that Doe defendants can't be used as a loophole.
Okay.
Like, you can't just file a super vague lawsuit hoping you'll find evidence later to support it.
Ah, so no fishing expeditions.
Exactly. The court emphasized that you have to have a good faith belief, based on some reasonable inquiry, that a specific defendant's product actually caused the harm.
Okay, so you can't just throw a bunch of Doe defendants in there and hope for the best.
Right. You have to actually have a reason to think they might be responsible. And this all has some big implications for law students and anyone who wants to work in this area of law.
Big implications.
Yeah, like, what are the big lessons from Bockrath?
What do we take away from all this?
Well, one of the biggest things is that pleading standards are higher now in complex, toxic tort cases in California, especially when you've got multiple defendants.
So after Bockrath, you can't just file a really vague complaint anymore.
Nope. No more global allegations.
You have to get specific.
You have to. You've got to clearly connect the products, the toxins, the injury, the whole chain of causation.
And of course, tie everything to a specific defendant.
Right. And that leads us to another big takeaway, using Doe defendants strategically, but also ethically.
Yeah, because as you said, they can be a useful tool.
They can.
But the court made it very clear. You can't use them to just skip doing your homework.
Nope.
There's a real ethical obligation there.
Absolutely.
You have to do your research before you file a lawsuit.
Right. You can't just sue and see what happens. You have to have a reasonable basis for your claims.
No fishing expeditions.
Exactly. And I think that brings up a really important point, a really fundamental challenge in these kinds of cases.
Oh, what's that?
It's often really hard to prove causation.
Yeah. That's the crux of it, isn't it?
Especially when the science is complicated and there's a long time between the exposure and the illness.
Right. And when people might have been exposed to a ton of different things over the years.
Exactly. Mm. And that's what the Bockrath court was wrestling with.
Trying to find that balance.
Right. How do you protect people who've been harmed by toxic substances?
Yeah.
But also make sure the legal process is fair to everyone.
So companies aren't getting sued for no good reason.
Right. And that brings us to another super important takeaway for you as the listener, especially if you're interested in going into litigation.
Hit me with it.
Writing a solid legal complaint. Understanding that 5-part test from Bockrath is crucial.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you have to think really carefully about how to lay out that chain of causation. What products were they exposed to? What toxins were in those products? How did they get into their body? Was each one a substantial factor in their illness? And then, of course, linking each set back to a specific defendant.
It's like building a case brick by brick.
It is. And if you can't do that effectively in your initial complaint, you know, your client's case could be in serious trouble. It might even get dismissed before it even really gets going.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
It is. And to be fair to the court, they did acknowledge how hard it can be for plaintiffs to get super precise scientific information about, like, exactly how they got sick.
Right, because it's not always cut and dry.
Yeah. And they also recognize that, like, you're not going to remember every single product you were ever exposed to.
Especially if it was a long time ago.
Exactly. So they said it's okay to use regular language and even make some general statements in the complaint, especially if the science isn't totally clear yet.
So there is some flexibility there.
There is. But, and this is really important, you still have to meet the basic requirements of that 5-part test.
You still got to have the foundation.
You do. You still need to allege exposure to specific products, identify them as best you can, claim internalization, say it was a substantial factor, and link it to a specific defendant.
So the court was trying to be practical, but also make sure there are some ground rules.
Exactly. So just to recap the big takeaways from Bockrath. We talked about how important it is to be very specific when you're pleading causation in toxic tort cases.
Specific, specific, specific.
We talked about how Doe defendants can be useful, but you got to use them ethically and for the right reasons.
The shortcuts.
Right. And we emphasized how crucial it is for lawyers to do their homework and investigate thoroughly before filing a lawsuit.
It all comes back to responsibility.
It does. And this actually leads us to a final thought for everyone listening. We've talked about how the legal system is trying to protect people from toxic substances.
Yeah.
And how it's also trying to make sure the legal process is fair for everyone involved.
Companies included.
Right. So here's something to think about. Science is always moving forward. We're getting better at understanding how diseases work. We're getting better at collecting data about exposure to chemicals. We're even getting better at tracing where toxins come from in the environment.
So all this progress.
Yeah. So how might all these advancements change how we think about pleating standards in the future?
That's a really good question.
Bachrath was decided a while ago, but it really shows how the law has to keep up with the times.
It has to adapt.
It does. It has to adapt to science, to new challenges, to a world that's constantly changing. And that's something we all need to keep in mind as we move forward.
Definitely something to think about.
It is.
Well, this was a great deep dive. I feel like I learned a lot about Bachrath and what it means for toxic tort law.
I did too. And thanks to our listener for the suggestion. Great pick. We'll see you all next time on The Deep Dive.
See you then.